In the heart of Secaucus, New Jersey, an unlikely hero emerged to save a failing fashion retailer. James Ree, a Korean-American private equity investor with zero retail experience, stepped in to rescue Ashley Stewart, a clothing brand serving plus-size, predominantly black women. This transformation wasn't just a business turnaround. It became one of the most remarkable stories in modern retail history. The journey, chronicled in Ree's book, Red Helicopter, has captivated business leaders from Walmart to McKinsey and landed Ree on the TED stage. Even Brené Brown featured him on her podcast, recognizing the profound wisdom in his approach of centering kindness and math in business. What makes this story so compelling isn't just the financial success, a staggering 160% annual return for investors, but how it reconnected Ree with his childhood values and immigrant parents' wisdom, proving that the purest truths we know as children can guide our most important adult decisions. At age 5, James Ree received an unexpected gift that would later transform his life and countless others. A classmate's father gave him a red toy helicopter, a gesture whose significance Ree wouldn't understand until later. His parents explained that his friend had lost his mother, and the father was struggling to raise 4 children alone. Young James had been sharing his lunch with this friend, who often had none. This simple childhood moment contained profound wisdom about human connection and generosity. Yet as Ree pursued conventional success, Harvard education, investment banking, private equity, he buried this formative memory, seeing it as irrelevant or even embarrassing in the cutthroat financial world. The red helicopter resurfaced decades later as Ree's father was dying from Parkinson's disease. This reconnection with his childhood values guided him to make a seemingly irrational decision, leaving his prestigious Boston private equity life to lead Ashley Stewart, a twice-bankrupt clothing retailer serving plus-size, moderate-income black women. The company was weeks from liquidation when Ree arrived at its grim Secaucus headquarters, a depressing maze of cubicles with no Wi-Fi and minimal amenities. Vendors were threatening employees, requiring armed security in the lobby. The executive team was in denial, battling each other rather than facing harsh reality. Something deeper drove Ree to fight for this company, perhaps memories of his immigrant parents' struggles or an instinct that something valuable was hidden in the rubble. In his first town hall meeting in the windowless cafeteria, he surprised himself by saying, "I think if we can center kindness and math in this company, we can get out of this mess together." This unexpected statement revealed the resurfacing of his childhood values. Kindness wasn't a word typically used in corporate settings, where it usually meant pushover. But Ree recognized that Ashley Stewart wasn't just selling clothes. It was providing a safe space for its customers, much like the Korean grocery where his mother could temporarily escape the stresses of not fitting in. Understanding Ree's approach to Ashley Stewart requires knowing his background as the child of Korean immigrants. His father came to America exactly 1 year after the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965 repealed restrictive quotas on Asian immigration, legislation made possible by the Civil Rights Movement. This connection between Korean American and Black American histories wasn't lost on Ree. His mother followed 3 months after, giving birth to his brother John, leaving her newborn with her grandmother, a common sacrifice in immigrant narratives. 5 years later, his father met his firstborn son for the first time. Despite being prestigious graduates in Korea, his parents constantly felt a beat or two behind in America, making poignant missteps in their attempts to assimilate. They deliberately cut their children off from their past, believing it would help them assimilate. They didn't teach them fluent Korean, his mother hid kimchi when friends visited, and they rarely discussed the Korean War despite its profound impact on their lives. The war had separated his mother from her father, a Seoul police officer who disappeared forever after instructing the family to burn all photos of him for their protection. Ree became his mother's defender against daily slights, mimicked accents, condescending service workers. when a hardware store clerk reduced her to tears over her inability to ask for rust-proofing material, he confronted him, nearly getting into a physical fight. This role of advocate would later inform his leadership at Ashley Stewart. At Harvard, Ree encountered a new world of social stratification, prep school kids, invisible networks, and wealth he'd never known. As a public school kid with immigrant parents, he was starting near the bottom of the Ivy League socioeconomic ladder. Being Korean-American often meant being the only non-white person in social groups while navigating unfamiliar socioeconomic hierarchies. After graduation, he shocked his parents by becoming a high school teacher for $12,600 a year. They had mortgaged their only asset, their house, to pay for Harvard, and this seemed a poor return. Later, he pivoted to business, landing offers from McKinsey and an elite Wall Street M&A group despite minimal experience. At each job, people admitted they weren't sure why they hired him. When Ree arrived at Ashley Stewart, he found a company with poor operational foundations, constant leadership turnover, and questionable corporate behavior, including private planes and suspect real estate deals. The company had survived largely because dedicated store managers maintained customer relationships despite corporate dysfunction. Most revealing was the company's reluctance to acknowledge its primary demographic, black women who happened to be curvy, not just curvy women. People would flinch when Ree directly mentioned race, revealing deep tensions. Rather than claiming an executive office, Ree set up a small cubby with low dividers in the middle of the second floor. He listened intently to everyone who approached, asking questions about their roles, motivations, and aspirations. Using a whiteboard in the cafeteria, he transparently shared how the company spent its limited funds. As he visited stores across the country, Ree discovered that Ashley Stewart wasn't just a clothing retailer, it was a community center. Customers visited multiple times weekly, with families stopping by after church on Sundays. The stores were safe havens where women felt seen and valued. Store managers were more like small business owners and confidants. Customers called them after hours for fashion advice, and they checked on regulars who hadn't visited in a while. The brick church store in East Orange exemplified this reality. Despite its worn appearance, yellowed lighting, animal print carpeting with masking tape covering tears, decade-old registers, it radiated hominess and cheer thanks to manager Chattery and assistant manager Shelley. Their genuine connection with customers was remarkable. They knew everyone's name, family situations, and personal struggles. Chattery even visited customers in hospitals. In the back room, Ree found two revealing problems. First, a ridiculous operations manual dictating every action with condescending rules that stifled ownership and agency. Second, piles of black and white camisoles, basic undergarments that weren't exciting purchases. The store had nearly a year's worth of inventory, tying up cash in dust-collecting assets, a fundamental failure to understand opportunity cost. Despite initial operational improvements, Ashley Stewart's foundation remained fundamentally broken. The situation was so dire that Ree resorted to selling warehouse scrap metal and excess inventory at deep discounts just to meet basic payroll obligations. He implemented new financial reporting systems that prioritized daily cash flow monitoring, giving management a clearer picture of the company's precarious position. By December, the company's cash reserves had completely dried up, leaving them unable to pay suppliers or meet basic operating expenses. The primary lender presented a stark choice. They would provide additional emergency funding, but only if the company prepared bankruptcy filing papers and accepted their designated restructuring advisor. While bankruptcy was now inevitable and liquidation seemed the most likely outcome, this arrangement would give Ree approximately 2 months to attempt saving as many of the 1,600 jobs as possible. The timeline was brutally short, but it offered a small window of opportunity. Ree faced the challenging task of educating his team about bankruptcy's harsh realities, a process that shattered many illusions. Workers were shocked to learn their status as unsecured creditors left them with no guaranteed rights to severance pay or continued health care benefits. They would have to stand in line with vendors and other creditors, hoping for minimal compensation after secured lenders received their share. Most devastating was the revelation that bankruptcy professionals, lawyers, consultants, and administrators would command fees upwards of $1,000 per hour and receive priority payment, while longtime employees might get nothing. In a desperate move, Ree reached out to his friend Steve's investment firm to serve as the stalking horse bidder, an initial bidder who sets the floor price for the bankruptcy auction. The firm agreed, not based on Ashley Stewart's business prospects, but solely on their trust in Ree's personal integrity and capabilities. When the bankruptcy auction arrived, the only other interested parties were liquidation firms looking to dismantle the company. Steve's firm won by default, enabling Firepine Group to make a significant investment and keep the company operational. This crisis forced Ree to confront a profound personal and professional identity crisis. Fully committing to Ashley Stewart meant abandoning his carefully constructed identity as a successful private equity investor, along with its security, prestige, and social validation. The prospect of becoming CEO of a struggling retailer triggered intense anxiety about his career trajectory and social standing. However, Ree ultimately chose to honor his ride-or-die commitment to his team and store employees, many of whom had invested decades of their lives in the company. He came to understand that exercising true agency, making authentic choices rather than following predetermined paths, was both painful and liberating. Instead of hiding behind conventional career expectations and social pressures, he would need to embrace uncertainty and forge his own path forward. After emerging from bankruptcy, Ree gathered employees in the same cafeteria where he delivered painful news months earlier. This time, he simply played "Here Comes the Sun" by the Beatles, symbolizing their rebirth and hope after a difficult winter. The symbolism wasn't lost on the employees who had weathered the storm. The song's message of renewal and optimism perfectly captured their collective journey from darkness to light. To rebuild the company, he introduced two fundamental concepts, the lemonade stand and the tea account. The lemonade stand represented a small business in a real community where profit matters, but other considerations exist too. A hybrid space where work behaviors and home behaviors coexist naturally. Like a child's lemonade stand, success depends not just on sales, but on neighborhood relationships, genuine service, and community trust. This metaphor helped employees understand that business success meant balancing profitability with human connection. The T account, the fundamental accounting framework showing assets on the left side and liabilities and equity on the right, became a teaching tool for financial literacy across all levels of the organization. However, Ree identified two critical limitations of traditional T accounts. They only include assets that can be precisely quantified in dollars, excluding human intangibles like loyalty or connectedness, and they're organized solely from shareholders' perspective rather than considering all stakeholders in the ecosystem. He emphasized how customer relationships, employee expertise, and community goodwill were valuable assets that traditional accounting ignored. The physical transformation was dramatic and symbolic. They abandoned their old headquarters completely, bringing only brains, open minds, new perspectives, and laptops to establish the company as a true startup. The move from a corporate office to a more modest space signaled a fresh start and flatter hierarchy. They strategically closed most mall stores, keeping 90 locations that were deeply embedded in their communities, stores with loyal customers and strong local connections. This physical decluttering mirrored Ree's personal realization that his professional armor, the typical trappings of corporate success, was actually a liability, not an asset. Ree took an unusual approach to leadership by making it clear his tenure was finite, with the explicit goal of making himself redundant. This transparency about his temporary role helped focus the organization on long-term sustainability rather than personality-driven leadership. he instituted a comprehensive cross-training program requiring senior staff to demonstrate understanding of the entire operation, from supply chain to store operations to finance. This approach created valuable organizational assets like slack, extra time, space, and grace for learning and innovation, and redundancy, backup systems, and knowledge sharing. These features reduced dependency on any single person or department, prevented knowledge silos, and built organizational resilience. The cross-functional training broke down departmental barriers and created a more adaptable, interconnected organization where employees understood how their role contributed to the larger whole. Rhee's approach to business transformation went beyond conventional metrics, demonstrating how human-centered changes could create cascading positive effects throughout the organization. His first symbolic yet significant change replaced the harsh, flickering fluorescent bulbs with warm LED lighting throughout Ashley Stewart's stores. This seemingly simple upgrade transformed the shopping environment, making clothes and customers look better and ultimately driving increased sales. The improved lighting created a more welcoming atmosphere that encouraged customers to spend more time in stores and try on more items. The technology modernization initiative was carefully orchestrated to serve both practical and human needs. By adding Wi-Fi networks and providing store managers with iPads, Rhee created new opportunities for digital engagement. Store managers began photographing customers trying on clothes in front of professionally designed step-and-repeat backdrops, creating Instagram-worthy moments that customers eagerly shared on their social networks. This organic, customer-generated content became a powerful form of authentic marketing, saving hundreds of thousands in traditional advertising costs, which were redirected to enhance employee benefits, particularly healthcare coverage. The company's first major post-bankruptcy technology investment revealed Rhee's priorities: a sophisticated human resource information system that democratized workplace control. This platform gave employees unprecedented autonomy over their schedules, allowing them to swap shifts directly and manage their time more effectively. The introduction of password-protected debit cards for payment addressed a crucial need in the workforce. Many employees, previously forced to rely on predatory check cashing services that charged exorbitant fees, could now access their earnings directly and securely, saving hundreds of dollars annually in fees. Rhee's obsession with insurance metrics demonstrated his belief that kindness could be quantified through data. By personally reviewing every workers' compensation claim and incident report, he created a culture where employee safety wasn't just a policy, but a lived value. Store managers were trained to prioritize safety protocols and employee well-being above all else. This approach led to remarkable results. Injury rates dropped by over 60% and insurance claims plummeted well below industry averages. When insurance actuaries questioned these unprecedented improvements, Rhee's response encapsulated his philosophy: kindness and math. The substantial premium savings were strategically reinvested in merit-based raises for store managers who championed these safety improvements. In a bold departure from traditional management theory, Rhee challenged the linear interpretation of Maslow's hierarchy of needs at Ashley Stewart. Instead of treating entry-level workers as mere functional units who needed to secure basic needs before accessing higher-order opportunities, he created an integrated approach to employee development. Regular town halls evolved into dynamic forums that blended practical education with entertainment and community building. These sessions became a unique platform where colleagues openly discussed everything from financial literacy and career development to personal growth and joy, creating a more engaged and empowered workforce. Rhee adamantly rejected fear-based workplace cultures, observing that while anxiety and pressure might drive immediate results, they inevitably lead to burnout and turnover. Instead, he pioneered what he called the upside-down hedgehog approach, where traditionally defensive creatures show their vulnerable sides. This metaphor translated into a workplace that balanced rigorous performance standards with genuine psychological safety. Team members were encouraged to take calculated risks without fear of punishment, and mistakes were treated as learning opportunities rather than failures. The office culture became known for its spontaneous karaoke sessions, monthly potluck feasts featuring family recipes, and impromptu dance breaks that became part of company lore. As Ashley Stewart's digital presence expanded, their analytics revealed an interesting trend. Significant revenue was flowing from affluent areas well beyond their traditional urban markets. Rather than pivot away from their core demographic, Ree saw this as an opportunity to reinvest in their founding communities. This meant upgrading store fixtures in inner-city locations, implementing living wage programs for store associates, and funding local educational initiatives. When investors questioned the wisdom of maintaining such a strong focus on Black women consumers, the growing diversity of their customer base proved them wrong. The brand was building bridges across demographic lines, with women of all backgrounds finding common ground in Ashley Stewart's message of empowerment and authenticity. The Finding Ashley Stewart initiative emerged as the crown jewel of this cultural transformation. The program sought out everyday heroes, teachers, nurses, community organizers, and entrepreneurs who were making profound but often unrecognized contributions to their neighborhoods. The selection process was rigorous, evaluating candidates on four key pillars: demonstrated confidence, leadership capability, commitment to public service, and consistent displays of kindness. Each store became a talent scout, identifying local changemakers through customer nominations and employee recommendations. The annual culmination at Brooklyn's historic King's Theater evolved into a cultural phenomenon. Celebrity judges, including prominent business leaders and entertainers, evaluated finalists, while iconic groups like En Vogue and Salt and Peppa brought musical energy to the celebrations. The event wasn't just about entertainment. Substantial college scholarships were awarded to deserving students, and community service grants were distributed to local organizations. Participants consistently described the experience in terms usually reserved for profound spiritual or natural phenomena. Many called it a revival of hope, a celebration of sisterhood, and a tangible manifestation of community power. Perhaps most poignant were the transformations visible among long-term stakeholders. Vendors who had once required security escorts during the company's bankruptcy now voluntarily established scholarship funds for employees' children. Store managers who had weathered the darkest days now stood proudly on stage, celebrating their role in the company's renaissance. The culture of joy had come full circle, proving that sustainable success could be built on a foundation of genuine human connection and shared purpose. During his transformative tenure at Ashley Stewart, Ree faced devastating personal losses that deeply impacted his leadership journey. His father's battle with Parkinson's disease ended during this period, leaving an indelible mark on his perspective about life and business. Shortly after, his mother's diagnosis with late-stage pancreatic cancer forced him to confront mortality in an even more intimate way. During her final 12 days in hospice, Ree maintained an unwavering vigil, sleeping in a hospital recliner and coordinating visits from her closest friends, who brought traditional Korean dishes, a connection to their shared heritage that provided comfort in those final moments. His mother's last conversations with him revealed profound truths that would shape his future decisions. Her first statement, "No matter what, I always knew you were 100% on my side," validated his lifelong commitment to loyalty and unwavering support. However, her second whispered confession, "When you leave, I will be nothing," struck him with the devastating realization that she might have surrendered her own identity in service of her family's success. A sacrifice that made him question the true cost of dedication to others. This personal watershed moment coincided with his decision to leave Ashley Stewart, a choice that became non-negotiable, something the majority owners recognized immediately in his resolute demeanor. Years of empowering his colleagues to exercise their own agency had strengthened his ability to make this difficult decision. The majority owner, recognizing the inseparability of Ree's leadership from the company's success, initiated a sales process rather than attempt to continue without him. The company's sale, while not achieving the astronomical returns possible years earlier, secured the organization's future and protected its employees. Despite substantial financial incentives offered by the new owners, Ri remained firm in his decision to depart. Among the numerous farewell messages, one from a manager who later passed away became his most cherished. "Thank you for believing in us when it was hard to believe in ourselves." A testament to the lasting impact of his leadership philosophy. Ri's post-Ashley Stewart career has flourished in academia, where he shares his experiences and insights with future leaders. His appointment as the John H. Johnson Chair of Entrepreneurship at Howard University and his role at MIT Sloan School of Management have allowed him to influence a new generation of business leaders. His TED Talk, which has reached millions, and his powerful conversation with Brené Brown about vulnerability and leadership have expanded his influence far beyond retail transformation. The Red Helicopter story, which began as a simple childhood memory, evolved into a powerful metaphor for authentic leadership and human connection. It exemplifies how the fundamental truths we inherently understand as children about fairness, kindness, and human dignity remain essential to creating sustainable success in business and life. Ri's journey proves that combining compassion with rigorous business acumen isn't just possible, it's imperative for transformative leadership. His legacy demonstrates that kindness, far from being a weakness, becomes an extraordinary strength when paired with strategic thinking and mathematical precision, capable of revolutionizing both organizations and individual lives.